right, and welcome back to A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Presenge, get to sit down with interesting folks. We get to talk about their business, what makes them run, and what possibly will make them fail. So today with me, I have Sergey. Sergey, can you introduce yourself, what you do, and what makes you special?
So my name is Sergey Basantsev. I am an immigrant from the Soviet Union. I've been a local here in Whatcom County since second grade. I work as an account manager for First American Title, and we are a title and escrow company here locally as a brand new startup, six months into the game.
Immigrant family, getting into business, doing well for yourself. It's always a good story.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. My parents, I've seen how my parents had to struggle and work really hard, and they didn't know the language. And so if you already have the language, this land, I mean, the opportunities for those who work real hard are plentiful, and hard work is rewarded here. Even with all the relationships people have, like, hard work is rewarded. And that is different than where I'm from.
Right. Yeah. My grandfather, this is not related to business even, but I always just love stories about people who've specifically come from former Soviet states, just because when you get into the family history, there's always so much there. And my grandfather, he literally rough and tumbled his way throughout, like, East Canada all the way to the Central Prairies, where he walked off a train, got into like an awful bar fight, nearly died somewhere along there, met Jesus. I just love those stories.
My family story is interesting because very similar. Historically, my family were in politics in Russia, like Cold War. I had some sort of family member that was on the airplane that got turned around halfway and were like, that's it, we're not negotiating. From there, my family became religious and hence outcasts. And so we came as refugees because in the Soviet Union there before the collapse, they were just kicking religious people out. They didn't want that.
Yeah.
And so we were ones that were able to escape.
I read the Gulag Archipelago a few years ago and some of the stories about what, like, to religious leaders there, like, everyone was kind of there having a bad time.
Yeah, no, they were equal opportunity haters for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, famously so. And I remember one story where I won't tell it on a business podcast because that's not tasteful, but it's it makes you feel bad. It's like the worst book in the world. It's just awful. Anyways, let's talk about business.
Sure.
Communist.
I'm happy to be here, though. Thank you so much.
No, this is good. Good start. Okay, so title and escrow companies.
Yeah.
We're in 2025. What are some of the things that are affecting your field of work right now?
Sure. Well, the interest rates for sure have halted a lot of people's desire to purchase a home. Because historically, you know, even 3 years ago, they're pretty low. But those are also numbers that historically have never been seen before. So they're not going to be that low again, from what I presume. So that does change. We've just seen a slowdown. And with the uncertainty politically, people are more hesitant to make a move willingly.
Yeah, I've heard similar things from insurance agents and from realtors and just about everyone that's kind of had to pay attention to the interest rates, where, like, before 2008, during the Clintons, even until recently, we would have interest rates as low as like 3% on occasion. And now that we're getting, what are we at? 6.75%, something like that?
6-7, yeah.
It seems astronomical. It's been worse, though, right?
It's been worse. Back in the 80s, 90s, it was 12, 13, 14% was unheard of. Again, home prices were significantly different. And those percentages at the home sale prices, it's tough to get in. No, it is. And it's tough to get in. And that's what we're encountering. However, life events still happen. People still die. People still get a divorce. People still have kids. People still have kids graduating, and then they have to downsize because they don't want to, you know, own a big home. So life events really are the drivers right now in our industry.
So interest rates, obviously a very national scale thing. Do you find that between different counties, maybe even just between different states, title and escrow changes with what they're experiencing?
No, I think it's pretty
universal.
Pretty universal.
Like, if someone was to airdrop you in New York and you were to start a new title company, probably the same game.
The same game. Right. Yeah, you'd be bound by the same kind of rules.
No, there's not going to be any big surprises.
No, it's very universal through the United States on how we do title and escrow.
So one of the big things that every business is kind of wrestling with right now is AI. I remember there were fears that over the course of like 10 years, 40% of American truckers were going to be put out of work because Walmart was coming out with their own truck. Mm-hmm. Do you think title and escrow is going to be meaningfully affected by AI?
No. And yes. Good answer. I think it'll be it won't be affected on a big scale. I think there are still the need for people to be verified that they're actual people. And there are platforms to do that. There are ways to, I mean, there's still, it's very basic. Numbers have to add up to zero. Signatures need to be obtained. Dots need to be dotted and T's need to be crossed. And then the conveyance. Now from there, there's obviously, we can't wait for advances in technology because it'll only make it easier and better and quicker and more secure. But, and that's what we're hoping for.
Right. Yeah. But you don't think in 15 years' time we're going to see title and escrow just move to AI arbitrators, eh?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
What do you think would stop AI from filling that job?
There are, so the people that I've worked with that were in the same industry, same seat, same office for 30 years are still learning things new. And so there are things that come up and that you have to overcome because everyone's goal is to close the transactions, but people are creative on what they do in their personal lives with their land. And so we have to encounter that and mitigate. And sometimes AI won't be able to replace that. Now, and then there's too many plates to spin that if someone could take and alleviate, then that's where AI will come in and micro functions.
Right.
And create reminders, create notes, create processes that are streamlined. That's where AI will come in and help because it'll take out the human element of error.
Gotcha. It's just going to make you more efficient at your job.
Now, in my role, interesting you ask, AI plays a big role and technology plays a big role because I do rely heavily on a CRM and then I rely heavily on technology for homeowner records.
Can you, for those who are unaware, what's a CRM?
Oh, it's a customer relations management tool.
So is that just like you got a phone book and you keep track?
So essentially it gives me a list of all my clients when I talk to them, what their business is. And for First American, we're one of Salesforce's biggest clients.
Oh.
So I use Salesforce and it's a blessing and I don't have to pay for it. It's part of the First American package that was very appealing because it serves so much of my roles as a salesman, more or less, or as an account manager where I have to maintain relationships with thousands of people.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Salesforce, and I'm sure like companies like that, they're always looking at ways to streamline their process, integrate more AI into it. So let's go on to real estate as a shifting market. We've talked about interest rates. They're kind of affecting things. I've always heard people say that, the market's about to crash. I've heard people doom saying that for about 6-7 years now. Do you really think the market's going to crash?
I don't think the market's going to crash because there's still people that need to sell homes and the world is becoming way more mobile that you can move to Bellingham as an option, moving from where you're moving from and make it an affordable move. And so there's still a lot of that happening. Bellingham is desirable. And the earth isn't making more land. And so statistically, real estate always pays.
Right.
And I don't see it crashing. Now, there's a caveat. And if we were to look into the future, and I'm a conspiracy nut, I think that there will be an issue 30 years from now where right now people can't buy a home because they don't want to give up their 3%, 2%. And there's a lot of people. There's a huge influx of ownership that came in and with values going up, they're only growing in equity. So they're going to say, I'm never going to give up that mortgage. I'm going to go take this equity, buy my home, make this a rental. Times, you know, you generate wealth that way. Well, that's like my position. And in 30 years, I'm going to be like, time to just ditch all my real estate and I'm going to retire.
Right.
Well, me and how many other people who got a 2-4% interest rate that are going to hold on to it for 30 years. And in 30 years, we're all going to be paying them off and being like, do I really want to keep this? So I don't know. If I'm going to guess, is it going to explode or implode? I think in 30 years, things might get cheaper.
Okay. realistically, some of us can't wait that long.
Yeah, that's true. I know. Yep.
Shucks.
Well, that's the only good news I have then.
Well, I suppose we'll take it. Because, yeah, it's about the same thing from all the realtors I've talked to, where they're like, this is just kind of the new normal. And this maybe should have always been the normal.
Yeah, it's tough. Because historically, this is what we would call like the lowest part of our industry. Mm. Well, and it's happened before, but it's popped up fast. Right. It hasn't popped up yet. And so that's what makes people a little nervous, where you're like, okay, is this the new norm? Because it does drop and then it picks up, right? And we saw that after 07 or 08 or 09,
yep.
But then it went up again. And that's a trend, but the trend's not trending. And so is it political? Probably. People don't want to make the move not knowing what the future is. And so there's a lot of factors playing into what I consider the market heading into.
Well, it's funny that you brought up politics, because one of the questions I was going to bring up was the current Trump administration. Hmm. Now, who would have thought that another Trump term would be marked by confusion, strife in the government, some maybe high emotions from some people?
Sure.
We've also seen an exodus, and at the risk of sounding political for viewers, we've seen a lot of people from traditionally blue states like California. They've been leaving. They've been going to other states that tend to be a little bit more red. We're seeing them become a little bit more purple. Washington seems to be a big destination for some of these locations. Like Whatcom County is expected to grow by 40%.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, like that's over 10 years. Insane. That's a different county at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So like from your perspective, you must be getting a little bit excited.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be good money.
Yeah, there's never a bad time for title insurance.
Mm. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Because there's always a fish bigger, and there will be a life experience. Like in my experience, and I only talk that because life experiences drive the market right now for us. We see a lot of death, divorce, and relocations and upgrades because people have to. And so there's always a buyer out there for the home.
Mm.
And maybe that's my optimistic attitude about it, because Bellingham is being discoverable. It is people typically come here, discover it, and love it. And so I always feel confident about what title and escrow is doing.
Interesting. Because I've heard that from other like insurance related fields, where it's usually a pretty stable market more often than not.
Yeah. And again, we talk about volume is where we make our money. So if things aren't moving as much, because so many people only a certain amount of people could have life events, it gets tough.
Right.
Yeah. And so but we have to be dynamic enough to pivot with the market. So there's a little dance there.
No, fair enough. So coming back to the Trump administration specifically. So one of the things that he's been very hawkish about is that he wants domestic industries to grow. Mm. So he's going to like hike tariffs up because we want American steel, and so on and so forth. Do you think the Trump administration is also going to meaningfully incentivize more house construction, more condos being built?
Not if they're going to be built out of wood.
Really?
That Canadian wood is really important to my industry, because I have enough friends who say, yeah, there are places where you can buy American lumber. Mm. The trees are young. They're not as weak. They're not as strong. Canadian wood is older wood.
Mm.
It's a different type of hardier wood. And so the lumber industry really quickly saw, and that translates to, okay, so how much is OSB? Okay, how many homes did we want to build in the next 5 years? Okay, that's going to be a reduction. And okay, so we're going to build that many homes. And, you know, the math has to math for people who make a business out of building homes.
Right. So long as this trade war is going on, probably going to be a little bit slow, huh?
That's tough. Yeah. And we saw that with our builders just a few years ago, where they're, you know, the considerations like, hey, we're going to hold off on building so much because you don't want to overextend yourself on so many future projects when wood prices, I mean, OSB went from, 20 to 80 bucks a sheet.
Jeez.
I mean, I think it dropped down now, but like that is a price where if I'm building a house and the price went up, I didn't sign that into my contract a year ago. So I'm eating it in the construction costs of my, you know, that's like the cost of doing business. Yeah. So I'm not going to do business if that's the cost. So it does play a real quick effect on our local industry.
No kidding. And Like, in your estimation, I know everyone's got their thoughts, but like, do you think this trade war is going to get finished soon and then we could just go back to building homes?
Man, I don't even know what's real anymore, so I have no idea.
I'm glad I'm not the only one in that state.
So it only makes sense to play cooperatively. Like, I think MIT came out with a program and it was what's more beneficial to play cooperative or not. And you win more of the times if you play cooperative. So I hope we win by playing cooperative.
Right. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Again, who would have thought that something like this would have happened with a Trump 2.0?
Right. Now, I'm always finding a way to make the best of the situation. So part of me, we had a lot of Canadian buyers. We have a lot of Canadian owners because we're right next to Canada. And it makes sense for those individuals to kind of diversify their portfolio. Now, emotionally, some of them are saying, I don't want to buy in America anymore. That means I get to help my agents with a different strategy. And so there are strategies that I implement with my agents that don't rely on the Canadian market that has proven successful.
What do those strategies look like? Like, how can you avoid that?
Sure. So if you're selling a home in Point Roberts or Blaine or Birch Bay that have a really high Canadian ownership rate, because it's right there, timeshare, you buy next to thing, you own it, it's great. But why not make that option for people down in Portland or Spokane or Omak or Wenatchee? And then you specifically target people who don't have any sort of desirable land that they could own a desirable piece of land in Whatcom County.
Okay. Do you find that? So my wife and I, we were looking at homes a few months ago. And for those who don't know, we have this little place in Whatcom County called Point Roberts. And Point Roberts, it's not an island, but it's isolated from the rest of the county because it's connected to Canada, but it's not connected to Washington State.
Correct.
Yeah, so to get to Point Roberts, you kind of have to drive into Canada. You got to go around a bit of a bend, and then you come into it. And their real estate was super cheap. But the reason why it got so cheap was because of COVID. And these people kind of got a little bit stranded on their little island unless they had a boat. So like, when it comes to these regions, do you think that we're going to see, like, is that viable for most people to kind of move in there? Do you think that's going to be like a big hot pocket for rentals in the future?
I don't know.
No,
because there's a logistical question to get that. Now there's a beautiful marina and there are beautiful homes. And so it attracts a certain type of human and with a certain type of value in money capacity, you know, their financial capacity. So with that in mind, it may only become more prestigious as people get aged out and then squeezed out by the capacity to say, okay, maybe I can own a piece of very unique land that's not very easy to get to. We're not playing cooperatively with Canada. So most of my neighbor, you know, it's, there may be potential for, I don't know. I mean, I look at things positively, so.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
I know, I'm
creatively thinking through that problem there.
I know, I'm trying to justify to myself that one day, like, get a good piece of property over there. They got big houses.
But, yeah, for remote workers, absolutely. If you don't need to, they've got, I mean, it's sustainable. And if you go into Canada, you have access to the coolest country, like, that we're closest to. Like, Vancouver's, I mean, Canada's pretty awesome. I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Yeah, I'm Canadian. I got some sympathies there.
Yeah.
And you know what? Remote work, that's just going to become more of a thing.
100%.
Actually, like, to that point then. So remote work, do you think that's going to be changing the way title and escrow works in the future?
It already has.
Really?
Yeah. Right. I have a previous coworker who lives in Arizona and has been a title officer here locally for many, many years.
Here in Whatcom County.
Yeah. He wanted to move somewhere and technology has given him the opportunity to sit behind a desk anywhere and do title insurance.
Yeah, there you go, right?
You could, and the model for title insurance, because they're not really replacing title officers. It's kind of a dying breed. So it's interesting that they have to take and spread the workload. And you do that through technology, because someone here, and it's all done the same. So someone here in Washington, in Whatcom County, can do title in King, Pierce, Thornton, Spokane, Walla Walla, Whitman, like all those counties, everything operates the same. And so if you're a title officer here or on the lake on your boat, you could just do the work. That's the coolest part.
Can you said that title and escrow kind of like a dying breed. Why is that?
Because there's no training manual for this kind of position as a title officer or escrow. Mm. You kind of get into it by introduction. Mm. And then once you're in, it pays well. It's stimulating. And there's always something new. And so for the right person, you don't leave. Mm. And that's very, very common in the industry. Like if you talk to any of our competitors, that is the story. Like, all that is just what it is. You all get right. in, you're like, why would I ever move?
If it's good pay and it's mentally stimulating, good mm-hmm. heavens, that's so much better than...
Mm-hmm. And the best part about title and escrow is you get what you put in.
Mm.
So do you want to run a small desk and you kind of want to leave it for every day? If your company allows, and there are someone like that where she gets all her work done at a certain time and she's okay, I don't need to grow bigger.
Mm.
So I get to live a life. Or it's like Shay, who's like, I'm young, I'm ambitious, I'm going to do the extra 15% and rise to the top and then see what I can do. And so that is the freedom of getting what you put in.
Right. So you were saying that people who run into title and escrow mm-hmm. effectively and they decide they like it. How does that happen?
Oh, well, I'll tell you my story. I was at a manufacturing plant running as a lead.
Mm.
And they capped the rate, like my pay rate. And then my friend who was an escrow assistant was like, our receptionist makes that much money. And so I was like, what? I'll do receptionist work if that's the starting wage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started as a receptionist and then got poached by the other competitors saying, hey, we could make you title examiner. And my current employer at that point was like, take it because we can't afford to make you a title examiner. And so I studied abroad and then I got an education next to someone who's been doing it for 25 years.
Oh, you probably learned a ton from that.
100%. And it was one-on-one. So where do you find that? It's like a mentorship type.
Yeah.
Unofficial apprenticeship where she gave me responsibilities as I was learning. And as she felt comfortable, because it is a risk analysis type job as a title officer. So you're like, okay, here it is. Are you doing? Are you checking? And there's so much that when I asked, how do I go from an examiner to a title officer? They're like, okay, when we trust you to remove things from the policy is when. So there was, and I Googled it. I did everything I can to see what does it take? There is nothing that it takes. It's literally the trust of the company that you work with. They're like, are we going to promote you to make decisions
right.
that affect people's lives and investments? And so then I did that. And then I did that as a title, as a commercial guy. And so that's how you jump in. And if you could swim, you're swimming.
And do you think that's typical of most people that end up in the field?
Yes. Yeah. Most of them that I know locally. And I even met title officers in Walla Walla because that's where my... Sorry.
Just make sure it's...
That's where my partner's from. I met some of the title officers and I'm like, oh, we're the same kind of weirdos. Because it is very isolating work. You're not on a team. You get a transaction, and you do research on property. And in a very systematic manner that you check a lot of boxes. And so there's the personality to sit at a desk for 8, 10, 12 hours and go through history documents that you can't even read. They wrote in cursive in the early, like in the 20s. And you're like, it's tough. Or maps. You got to draw maps. There's a lot to title examining that people understand. And so it's tough to learn. There's no school for this. You have to get in and see if the people around you are comfortable enough to teach you the skills.
It really almost seems like it's like a trade.
It's a trade.
Interesting.
It's historical research.
No, it's true. I suppose, like, I've never heard of a class at a university for title and escrow.
Well, think of, like, every small community had its own way of keeping records. And so, for the last 120 years, you have to deal with every office that indexed things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Last name? Address? By the parcel ID number? By the legal description? So how do they categorize things? And so where do the document chain lead? It's complicated. And so you can't necessarily adapt one approach to everything. It's you're encumbering or you're, as you're encountering things, you're dealing with that set of systems.
It's interesting. That almost sounds like it would incentivize town escrow companies to really be local owned and
locally based. 100%. You have to.
Right.
But over the years, like First American, you know, in Chicago and a few other ones, well, they come in and they buy out these companies who have locally held those records, and they say, hey, you're valuable. We're coming in and we're gonna keep this. Now, they've since made everything available online, and so you could go look at records.
Right.
And, you know, from 100 years ago, written every single document. And so that makes the ability to title anywhere pretty easy because it's all digitalized.
Yeah, interesting. So I suppose that kind of feeds into why you guys refer to yourself as a corporate startup, where it's effectively run as a small business. You just fall under a larger umbrella for some of your infrastructure.
Yes, and the tools and resources.
Mm.
Yeah, think of it as, you know, every Jack in Box is a little different because they're franchised.
Right.
Well, First American has a standardized approach that they highlight the people and their personalities and strengths, because this job is very, like we talked about, different shades. And so if you make certain things streamlined, it leaves the ability and the space to connect on the emotional and the human side of things. And so it was pretty massive for us on that front.
So keeping with this idea of the different title and escrow companies that in around here, are any of them taking on like these weird initiatives or these weird different ways to do business that is kind of making them stand out? Is there anything that helps them stand apart that way?
Well, yes, we do for sure.
Mm.
That is the reason why we jumped ship. I was doing really well in my previous job. Shay was the top producer at Chicago Title. Mm. And she and I said, hey, there's enough here that if we do jump and create something from scratch, there's enough value there to set us apart separately.
Interesting.
Yeah, because from start to finish, there's so much to real estate. And on my end of things, you know, Shay needs to be really good and available for her clients. And that's going to win us a lot of trust and business. My job is to bring value ahead of time so that way people have a reason to use us. And so there's a lot of tools that First American said, hey, we have AI, we have printing, we have marketing, we have translated materials, we have ways for you to help people in Whatcom County that people in Whatcom County have never seen before. I'm like, oh, and it's easy, and it's just I have to go and give it and make it available.
Interesting.
Yeah, so like predictive data, for instance. I have been very successful with that, and being local, I could run a predictive data list and say, and see some names, and I do this all the time. And some of the predictive data is who is likely to list their home. And so I don't know if you know, but Target got sued many years ago for predicting pregnancies.
Because I do remember this.
Yeah. Yes. Because they took cookie data and they said, yo, based on your cookies and your search criteria, you're probably having a baby. Well, We are the second biggest title company in America, so we purchase every cookie data available.
Wow!
So we predict when people are likely to list accurately.
So, like, how does that even work? Like, do you guys take in all that cookie data and then you guys have an internal system that aggregates all of that and comes out with?
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge amount of data.
And so I provide that tool to my clients, to my agents, who say, hey, I have to reach out to people I don't know. I have to somehow add a value. And I'm like, okay, well, you can't talk to 200 people in the neighborhood. There are 69,000 homes in Whatcom County. How are you going to reach out to everyone? You can't. It doesn't make sense. Your marketing dollar is better spent on treating your past clients really good and being a good community member than it is chasing business. But if you don't chase business, it's not going to come to you. So you have to do something. And so what sets you apart? They all have a creative way that sets them apart.
And that's something that some of these more localized title and escrow companies, they probably just can't even feasibly do that.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, because when I worked at the competition, I had numerous agents say, why? They would bring an example from someone down in King County, as they know as an agent, as like, let's say Keller Williams. Why does my Keller Williams agent have this tool and I can't? And my answer was, we don't subscribe to that tool. So I apologize. Because locally, we only had to compete with the local guy, and they couldn't afford the tool, so why would we buy the tool that we don't have to compete on that level?
Right.
First American plays cooperatively, and so they said, hey, we have this tool, and we're going to make it available to everyone
Wow.
And so, like, for me, bringing in that resource, like, hey, it's now available to you. It's now available to you. And my agents could maximize and optimize their exposure and their effectiveness to grow business. And it's measurable, and you don't get successful on an accident. So some of these people are really good at having high value conversations with people they're most likely going to do business with.
That's pretty stellar. Cause that just, like, even stepping aside from the financial perspective, that just saves time.
100%.
That's a lot of time.
Spend your time with family and your past clients. That's what I tell people. Spend time in your community. But you have to do certain things. So let me help you do these certain things really easy and quick. And if it's easy to do, it's easily done. Because then you could measure the effect. Yeah. And I don't only, like, part of, like, being in Whatcom County, I'm not only interested in helping those who helped me. So I help my agents help their community partners. Like, I was a firefighter for many years in Ferndale. And they have outreach programs that they want to reach out to their communities. They do a Santa run. So if you live in Ferndale, please donate to the Santa run. But I was there when that started. I was on the board of directors for the Volunteer Association. So I knew what it took to put on an event. And now, knowing what are the tools I have, I'm like, hey, if you're going to go out on a Friday, let's mail out those people on a Thursday. So they get a piece of mail that says, hey, we're coming here on Friday. Please donate your food. Mm. Now, you can't mail that same piece of letter to someone you're going to the following week. So let's break it up in different. And that's what I do. So, like, every weekend we're going to, you know, as they structure their event, we're going to release a mailer to those neighborhoods and those homeowners and occupied homes. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that. My agent does that using my tool.
You just make it available.
I just make it available.
That's brilliant.
Because that doesn't pay me in any capacity. That may build my agent's exposure, and their growth in their business grows my business. And so I truly do care about my community. Now I say, okay, how do we expand the effectiveness of those who are giving? Because the more you give, it comes back.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, last question, then we'll close it out. So one of the things I noticed was really interesting. I had Marty Stauffer. He's a local insurance agent that's in town here. And he was talking about the insurance field. Because if there's one thing that Whatcom County has in abundance, it's realtors and real estate agents. It's like over 1,000 of them. Mm-hmm. And then it's insurance agents, especially here in the Lincoln. For whatever reason, they're all over the place. But it was interesting because he was talking about it. And he was saying that as competitive as it is, it's not cutthroat. There's a pretty healthy respect amongst the different insurance agents, and I'm sure the real estate agents, most of them will say the same thing. Title and escrow. There's only a few players, really. How would you describe the market? Is it competitive but cutthroat or something else?
It's very competitive because we go for volume, and any shift is measurable because there's only X amount of recordings that happen, and the county says we recorded 500. Who recorded them? Which title company? Well, A, B, C, D recorded these numbers. And so you're like, okay, that's how many deals they closed. So it's very competitive. However, there are six people like me. There are 14 escrow closers.
Okay.
And maybe 11 title officers. And they've all worked with each other at different companies. Literally, I've worked with one man who worked back and forth, because you negotiate your worth. The man is worth gold, so who's going to be paying his wage? And that is how small the community is. So, like, I worked at one company where my first child was born, so we had baby showers. And then I worked with my daughter at another company. I'm like, man, these people are my friends.
Right.
Like, that's why earlier I said I'm not soul winning. I don't want to ruin relationships. Like, friendships matter a lot, and communities are tied and tight. And that, for me, is, like, reality as well. Mm-hmm. And so, is it competitive? Yeah, because we want every deal. But is it cutthroat? Like, are we cutting people down? There have been those practices, but I don't think it pays well. I think cooperation. And so I don't, even with, like, my competitors, I see them and we hang out. I'm like, oh man, the memories we have. Like, this is good. We all are all serving the same people. Check. Done. There's no cutthroat.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Well, Sergey, thank you for sitting down with me. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Many tangents. So you'd always go on. Well, thank you all for tuning in for another episode. Come back next time because we're going to be talking about how someone gets into your industry and how they survive.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Take care and be well. Bye-bye.